From SGI USA, I'm Cassidy Bradford, and this is Buddhability, the weekly series where I talk with Buddhists from all walks of life about the power we each have to change our lives and the world around us. This weekend, I made some brunch for friends. I consider myself someone who cooks for practicality. But through my friends' feedback, I learned that I can actually cook things that taste good and are not just practical. And this is a super simple example, but we're always learning new things about ourselves. Whether it's moving on from some narrative that we've always held, or learning something deeper about who we are and where we come from. When we asked you all what you've learned about yourself or a friend, many of you shared that you've learned that you're more capable than you give yourself credit for. One of you learned about yourself through a recent diagnosis, which now has led to an even happier life. One thing in particular that struck me about all your answers is that so many of you have learned things with the help of others. As we say many times on the podcast, we don't exist in isolation. It's through our interactions with others that we can come to learn about ourselves. Buddhist philosopher Daisaku Ikeda held countless dialogues with world leaders and ordinary people. He says, dialogue serves as a mirror, enabling us to see others as well as ourselves. It enables us to break through the shell of our ego and expand our state of life. Through chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, we can start to see our lives clearly and, like today's guest, discover new things. Today, I'm speaking with Coda Jordette of Fargo, North Dakota. Coda and I talk about his journey navigating recovery from addiction and taking care of his mental health. He shares how he used his Buddhist practice to better understand himself and even his family and heritage in new ways.
My name is Coda Jordette. I live in Fargo, North Dakota. We've often been criticized for how cold that we get here. And I work at a sunflower/food grain facility. So I package out sunflower seeds into large bags and we ship them off to companies. And I'm actually 30 years old.
Yeah. So just to start to get to know you a little bit, I'd love to know what your life was like growing up.
Yes. So I was actually adopted into a loving, caring family at about 2 weeks old. I grew up in a Christian kind of family. I studied Christianity from a very young age, and then I kind of found Buddhism. So I grew up in a very loving family. However, I did suffer from mental illness, and there was a lot of things that I had to work on throughout my youth. I was very, very quiet. I struggled with really connecting to other youth. I did have a few good friends that I really connected to when I was really young. However, I did kind of struggle with fitting in or being the cool kid, per se.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So I like studying school projects and stuff like that and really engaging in my school activities. That's really how I got connected to some of the friends that I had when I was a kid. So.
And I know that actually it was like through a friend that you made in middle school, right? That like eventually you came to find out about Buddhism. So yeah, I would love to know like how you guys became friends and how eventually that led you to Buddhism.
Yeah, actually, so the guy who introduced me to Buddhism, he's one of my best friends. So we were friends since middle school, and our friendship has been so solid since ever meeting each other. Like, we are always connected and always relating to each other, always making jokes and playing video games and having a good time all the time. And we always been there to support each other. And eventually, he was introduced to this Buddhism. So I noticed that he really suffered with like anger issues and like just kind of emotional stuff. However, when he started chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, he really started to calm down. He seemed really more at peace than before Buddhism. And then he introduced me. He introduced me to a friend who also lives in Fargo, North Dakota. And we just really clicked and everything started to get so much better in my life from that point on. So
I mean, I know that like we haven't quite talked about this yet, but I know that you started to struggle with addiction from a young age, and this was like before encountering Buddhism. As much as you're comfortable sharing, you know, I'd like to know just a little bit like what your life was like at the time.
So like I said, I was actually adopted, and I actually have Native American heritage. And growing up, I did always have that question of, oh, where did I actually come from? Like, I know I have a very loving family that cares about me so much, but I didn't know certain things about, like, my genetics and what made me who I was. And it also made me question, like, some things about, like, mental illness and other genetics that I was curious about. And so, yeah, I was kind of really thinking about where I came from in that aspect and what made that up for me. Basically, from age 17, I really started drinking. I think it was mostly because I didn't know about my bloodlines and who my relatives were. I didn't know anything about that. So it was kind of like a internal war with myself. So I started drinking. I started pill addiction and took a toll on my mental health. And I struggled with being not very verbally nice to people. So pretty much age 17 to age 20, we're just like really wild with my drinking habits. And I had a stepbrother who introduced me to recovery. And yeah, I knew I had to do something. It was very spiritual and emotionally challenging to get through everything. And like I said before, with my friend, he suffered a lot from anger, and it was kind of in the same boat. So when my friend introduced me to Buddhism, I found recovery with my stepbrother and really started to use recovery and Buddhism as something to really develop my inner core and really, really develop who I was.
Can you tell me about, like, the first Buddhist meeting you went to? What was it like?
I think I was kind of nervous.
Yeah,
kind of nervous because I didn't really know the people besides my friend at that time. But, like, I just, like, really saw how happy everyone was and how everyone was really compassionate and kind towards me as well. That's what really drew me to want to go to the neighborhood Buddhist meetings. And it doesn't matter if it's like 3 people, 5 people, 10 people. The idea of the meeting in the Buddhist community is that everyone's trying to become happy. And that I think that's what really drew me in. Everyone's so happy and so joyful. And I started to take note of that from other people. I started to see how happy my friends have become in my Buddhist community. And that I think that's what I really wanted to develop myself to, because I wanted to be happy.
Yeah.
Like, I have all these things going on, addiction, mental health issues, and I really wanted to develop myself so that I can become absolutely happy. Like I said, I was a little nervous, but then I started to open up and they really were kind and appreciative of me. So
I think, like, so many folks that I interview, that is usually like people's kind of first gut impression. Like, wow, these people are really joyful and really want to become happy. And I want to become happy too. So I guess I'm going to try this. Many guests on the podcast come from like super populous cities like LA and New York. And sometimes we have people reach out that say, like, is there anybody practicing Buddhism where I live in this small town or rural area of the United States? So I would love to know what it's like practicing Buddhism in Fargo.
So we got like Fargo, Bismarck, Sioux Falls, and Minot. They're all 2, 3, 4, or 5 hours away from each other. We travel to each other a lot of the time. And I've noticed that even though we're traveling like these distances, everyone is so incredibly joyful when they see each other. That's what really makes me want to practice. Like, even though with the weather, sometimes the weather gets pretty wild around here. So like, we have really crazy winter storms. Some of the times we got to plan ahead, or sometimes we have to leave early or late from these meetings.
Yeah.
Even though we go through all that, it really helps us develop our lives and really helps us become absolutely happy.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, you know, when you have to travel a little bit more distance to see people, the kind of like determination that you have, strength to like, okay, I'm going to set aside this time and, you know, drive away to go see some fellow Buddhists and chant together. But I imagine, like, because of that, then the community is really like strong and tight because people are like really, I don't know, like fighting hard to be able to like spend time with each other and really like take care of each other.
Yeah. So it definitely does take a determination, right? So if I'm going to get into a car and travel 2 hours for my Buddhist friends, I know my heart is in the right place. Seeing them means so much to me, and then them seeing me means so much to them. Everybody just like so incredibly happy when they see each other. I don't know how to explain it. It's just like it takes determination. It takes effort too. Like you have to physically drive the car, and sometimes there is periods where we do get a little tired. But yeah, the effort and the causes that we make to help each other become happy are really amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I can imagine the feeling of like the people that you drive to go to support, knowing like, oh my gosh, this person has driven 2 hours to see me just so that we can chant and they can encourage me in this time that I'm really struggling. I think that kind of care, I'm sure like many other people in this area also have for each other. And it's just really amazing. So yeah, you're like getting to know this wonderful community in Fargo and like in the Dakotas, and you kind of start your practice. So when you first started chanting, what were you chanting about and what did it feel like to chant?
So I think I felt really at peace for one. I felt really peaceful and really like good about myself. I started to like raise my awareness of my surroundings too.
What kind of things did you start to realize about yourself, or like what internal changes did you see happening?
Yes. So it was very like very simple, like as simple as, oh, this is good for me, or oh, this is not so good for me. So I'm going to do this, or I'm going to cut this out, or I'm going to try this out. That was some of the awareness, and that actually helped me with my sobriety too. So like, could be as simple as, oh, maybe this friend is supportive of me, or maybe this friend is not actually a friend, but just kind of there taking up time or taking up my kindness or whatever it may be. But I started to learn who I should kind of really engage in my life. I learned what habits are good, what habits are bad. I started to learn more appreciation for things instead of just like automatically thinking of the negative. Because that was a hard one. That was a really hard one. I was thinking of like the negative. I was like, this is like the worst possible thing that could happen. And then I would like go on chant and I was like, okay, that's not that bad. So kind of like that though. That's kind of like what I learned from chanting earlier. So
yeah, it's so funny. I mean, even now, like, yeah, I can feel like, oh no, this is just like, nobody's life is as miserable as mine. And then I chant and yeah, I gain so much perspective. Like, well, actually, maybe it's not that serious, you know? It sounds to me like really early on in your practice, chanting gave you kind of like the wisdom to be able to see what was good for your life and what wasn't and how to navigate those things.
Yes, I really learned about myself. I learned of my potential. I really learned what I was capable of. I learned my limits as well. Like I would kind of have the wisdom to know, oh, maybe I'm pushing too much for this thing, and it's kind of like putting stress on myself.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really developed the wisdom to, oh, I can do this. I can really challenge to break through this, and I can absolutely make it happen with the proper causes to generate the effects that I wanted to see in my life. So I was also chanting for, so like my work ethic wasn't good at the time because of my like addiction and just like completely being unfocused. Yeah. So one of the things I chanted for was I really want to be well off in a job. And at age 20, I got hired on to be a really young supervisor at a food mill facility. And yeah, it was a very challenging job. At that time, when I started chanting and that happened, I was like, wow, this is some serious stuff. And this is like, this is really amazing. I really got to keep trying this out. So,
oh my gosh. Wow. I mean, at such a young age to get a position like that is pretty wild, and I'm sure, you know, like you said, definitely was challenging. So I'd love to know too, like, as you're chanting and seeing these results of getting this job and starting to kind of have more awareness, what did that look like sort of in relationship to your recovery?
I was really unfocused. Like, I had no desire to, well, I did have a desire, but I didn't know how to push for it of becoming happy. And actually, I really wanted to overcome all the negativity in my life. And it was kind of a lot with the mental health and the addiction. But when I connected the two, like, I started to go to recovery meetings and I started to go to Buddhist meetings in my community. When I continuously went to both, I started to feel better about myself and I started to feel at peace with myself. It just gradually got better and better as time went on. I think that both my Buddhist practice and my recovery are interconnected.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, Buddhism is not this just like magic, I don't know, wave a wand and then everything goes away, right? Chanting doesn't mean that you don't have to like take care of recovery, right? Or that you don't have to take that kind of action. So I think we talk about this with mental health too, right? Like sometimes you need to take medication or you need to see a professional. I'm wondering, what about your Buddhist practice do you think supported your recovery?
So chanting really gave me the strength and the courage to really dive into my recovery. And I also had like a major victory around the same time I found recovery as well. So like I knew I had to take care of my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I had some major mental illnesses. Even my childhood, I had quite a bit of mental health issues. I was working with doctors for many, many years, like psychologists, therapists, and all those kind of professions. I think I knew what I had, but I didn't know how to treat it. So I kept working with these professionals. Around the time I found chanting, I was like, I really got to break through this. This is like something that is, I want to say even life or death kind of situation. But I was chanting. I was visiting with all my Buddhist friends. They kept encouraging me to never give up. And I was actually able to find the proper medication for my diagnosis. And I was actually able to really break through. And it's a very necessary medication that I take. It really helps me stay focused. Like I said, I was losing focus towards the beginning of my practice. But since doing this treatment, I'm able to actually really, really thrive in my life. And because my mental health is good, I'm also having the desire to go to both recovery meetings and Buddhist meetings in my community. Like, my mental health is just like solid today. And I haven't had any incidents with my mental health in quite a long time.
Wow. I mean, first of all, congratulations. It's interesting. Sometimes you might think like, oh, I just want to get rid of whatever this health issue is. I just want it to disappear. But being able to identify exactly what the illness is and how to treat it is also like such a powerful way to use our Buddhist practice. So like during this time when you're earlier on in your practice and you're breaking through in terms of like addiction and mental health, were there any Buddhist concepts or quotes that really like helped you at the time to encourage you to move forward or to like better understand what you were going through?
So this is a quote from Nichiren Daishonin. Suffer what there is to suffer, enjoy what there is to enjoy, regard both suffering and joy as facts of life, and continue chanting Namiho Rengekyo no matter what. That really got me going. Like, I was like, I don't have to absolutely suffer. I can absolutely break through anything that I have in my life. I think that quote is really talking about how both sufferings and joys are facts of life. But if we have that perseverance to keep going no matter what, that's what's really going to help us break through.
It took me a long time to like embrace that because I was like, I don't want to suffer. Like, what? I don't get this. But I think to your point, like this is just a part of life, you know, is we're going to have suffering and, you know, we experience it. But I think, yeah, as long as we continue to chant Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, we can always like transform it and learn how to be happy even in the midst of like those things going on. So yeah, I really love that quote. I also know that after you had been practicing for some time, you really built up the courage to start chanting about finding biological relatives. So could you tell me about that experience?
Yeah, so I found recovery. I found this Buddhist practice at the same time. I started like really working in my job and really expanding my life. And there has been a few struggles there with the recovery aspect. Like there's even like some relapses and some times of struggling, but because I was strong in my Buddhist practice, I was able to lift myself out of it and really, really get back engaged in the recovery. And I have so many different people that support me in my recovery and my practice. And through all those continuous efforts, I really wanted to see a different part of myself. That might be really deep, but I was like really chanting and really wanting to meet a blood relative. Really wanting to happen, like this is going to happen no matter what kind of attitude. And through this chanting and like through all these causes, there was a letter that came into my father's mail. And this is my adoptive father, very loving man, very supportive of everything that I've done so far. And there was a letter that came in my father's mail about my Native American tribe. I'm a part of Ojibwe Boys Fort in northern Minnesota. They were looking for someone to take care of my deceased mother's land. She passed away in 2007, according to the document, but the tribe was looking for someone to take over the land or take care of it or something. And there's three names that came up. My name and then two other women. And it was my birth name. And I had the idea that I wanted to contact these two other women.
It must have been really difficult getting that letter and knowing that your biological mom had passed.
So it was obviously really emotionally challenging. That was just another really deep family karma that I really wanted to transform. And because my sobriety was good, like I didn't feel like, oh, I'm going to go party or something or do something really negative. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel that. And because I was so well off in that, I was able to chant with like the real appreciation of finding out this news rather than feeling defeated that my mother had passed away. I was looking at the positive outlook of what was going on. And yeah, it took a lot of chanting with appreciation. It also kind of took a lot of dialogues. I was talking with my father a lot of the time and talking to other friends that I've had. Everyone was just like so supportive of me wanting to meet the sister, and everyone was also very supportive of how to help me, because there was a little bit of maybe sadness or emotional challenges, but I was actually able to get through that because I had really strong support friends. They were really supportive of helping me with my emotions, whether it was like going to a movie or like chanting or like playing video games or having a good time in a way that wasn't destructive, but rather constructive. Even though my mother has passed, our mother blessed me and my sibling with each other, and we actually got to meet. So one of them I contacted, I had no response. I was trying to connect her on Facebook, no response. I connected to the other one. I reached out to her on Facebook Messenger, and I was really like, yo, I think we might be related or something. And she was like, she did confirm it. She knew of me, but she didn't know like how to get connected to me.
What did it feel like?
I was like, wow, that is a fantastic breakthrough. And it's not magic though. Like the chanting, it's not magic. It's really where our heart is, and it's really our desire to want to actually become absolutely happy. We started to click off like really right away. She confirmed that addiction has made its way into our bloodlines, and it was very, very my life story. And I was like, I gotta go visit her. Like, I can't waste any time on this, and I gotta take the opportunity. So I went to go visit her, and we hugged each other for the first time, and really, really saw each other. I think one of the words she said was, wow, we really look alike. And yeah, she was just like, it was just a very good conversation, and we were so joyful to see each other. I don't know if I can explain the peace that I felt knowing that I found a blood relative. And she actually this last year, she introduced me to her kids, and I got to be an uncle again. And
wow.
One of her young kids looks like a younger version of myself. So I thought that was really, really cool.
Wow. You said you wanted to find a blood relative because you really wanted to, like, know another part of yourself. In meeting her, do you feel like you found that?
Yes, I feel a lot more at peace knowing that I've met my biological half-sister. Yeah, I know each of us, we have our own struggles and challenges. However, we're very supportive of each other. I think that aspect has really helped her as well find peace, knowing that we know each other now. The universe has blessed us with each other. So we definitely still take advantage of that, even though we don't have our mother anymore. Because my sister is still here, I can still concentrate on our relationship, and I can also keep chanting for her happiness, keep making efforts towards her happiness.
I mean, it reminds me of the quote that you shared, like, suffer what there is to suffer, enjoy what there is to enjoy. The suffering and, like, pain of this moment still existed, right? It's not that, like, oh, wow, I just feel immediate appreciation. But, like, both of those things can exist and we can move through them. To me, that's really just, like, so encouraging. And I think about that experience and that moment of your life. It sounds like it was really powerful meeting her, and using your Buddhist practice really helped you to have the courage to get there. So how are you using your Buddhist practice now in relation to your family?
So I have a lot of family karma, as you can tell. So it's very deep.
Yeah.
It's very deep karma. So I have to have that determination as well to chant for their happiness and their peace and their protection of health. I really, really chant for those of us that are connected, that we can keep that connection and really, really develop ourselves through that connection. So
now you've had this big breakthrough in terms of connecting with blood relatives. You're in a very different place in terms of your mental health and sobriety. So what kind of goals do you have now?
So a new challenge has arisen.
As they always do.
And I think it's a good challenge, though. So I'm really thinking about engaging in a possible different career path. Factory work, like, it pays pretty well. But I think my life mission is to really, like, help people who are suffering, help them break through. So I'm really, really considering and starting to chant on a career path, maybe a psychology degree. I'm also thinking of what's called a peer support specialist. So what these people do is they visit people who are suffering with active addiction or maybe the homelessness or, like, other mental health issues to really support them and help them get the help that they need. And I was really thinking about maybe taking that on as a possible career path. It's a lot. There might be some emotional challenges. I might have to really, really chant in the morning and really break through so that I can really support people that I'm trying to help.
That's really exciting. Sounds like you're in the same or, like, similar industry as you were when you were, like, 20, right?
Yeah. So I was actually pretty much in this industry for, like, maybe a little over 10 years. So yeah, it's a pretty dramatic change. However, I feel like I can really, really help a lot of people because what I've learned in recovery and what I've learned in my Buddhist practice.
Taking this kind of shift in your career makes me think about the concept turning poison into medicine. And essentially what it means is, like, you know, we can use the things that cause us suffering or, you know, the poison as an opportunity to kind of go deeper and transform our inner life and, you know, in essence, become happy because of that. And through that process, we can then encourage other people who are going through that same thing that, you know, we suffered with. So, yeah, I mean, for you, how would you describe that kind of concept based on your own experience?
So it's like you're really transforming what is preventing you from becoming happy into something that makes you become absolutely happy. So it's like I had this, like, addiction and I had, like, these mental health issues and I've had this family karma. But some people, if they don't have something as strong as, like, a Buddhist practice or a faith, they might think, oh, why is this happening to me? Like, I don't know what to do. Can somebody please help me? Like, that kind of mentality. But because I combined all these things, I was able to transform it into my happiness and my well-being, and everything is just so in alignment with each other.
That was so great. Like, the thing that is, like, causing you suffering or preventing your happiness, turning it into the thing that's, like, the cause for your ultimate happiness. And I think, like, now at this point in your life, kind of figuring out, like, okay, what's next for me really seems like, how do I use all of this, like, I don't know, fuel in my life for something that's really, like, fulfilling and satisfying? Is this, like, a recent discovery?
I think within the last 2 to 3 years, definitely, for sure. Like I said, there's some slips with my sobriety. Yeah. And some challenges there, but in February 18th, I actually celebrated 2 years of sobriety. So that really made me think about things, and I was just kind of like thinking, what can I do to really help people? Like, I've been helped so much throughout my life. What can I really do to really help my community, but also make it into a kind of a career path as well, and develop my life and transform everything from myself to my environment? So,
oh, I'm so excited for you, Coda. I think it's kind of, for many people, really scary to think about, like, oh, maybe I'm gonna, like, take a huge pivot in my career. And it's also really huge to, like, get to a point in your life where you feel like, okay, I'm ready. Like, I really want to support other people. I really want to utilize my experiences and my life to just support other people. To get to that kind of point, I think, is just really huge. I want to close out the interview with a question, a piece of advice. So for someone listening right now who doesn't live in a major city or area with, or maybe they think there aren't a lot of Buddhists, what advice would you give them for starting their practice and, like, continuing on?
Never, never, ever give up on your happiness. You are so worth it. And yeah, it might seem like there might not be a lot of other Buddhists in the communities that you have locally. There is definitely tools to help people get connected. If you have, like, a Buddhist community that is fairly far away, please don't panic. You definitely can absolutely make efforts to go there. It's also a responsibility. We have to take responsibility for our own happiness. So when we take responsibility for our own happiness, we are definitely more determined to make it happen. I do want to share one last thing. I'm entirely grateful for my mentor, Daisaku Ikeda. His great example really helped me in all of this. All this alcoholism, the addiction, the mental health, the family karma, everything. Just by, like, really studying his lectures and his speeches and stuff, it really helped me engage in my life and really, really face everything that I had going on.
Coda talked a lot about the incredible joy he experienced with others in his Buddhist community. And in our interview, I totally felt it. Through facing addiction, mental illness, and family obstacles, Coda has become so bright and cheerful. I realized that this is the kind of joy we can all experience through chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo and challenging everything head-on. A key Buddhist concept is absolute versus relative happiness. Relative happiness is the joy we feel when something goes our way. Maybe our crush asks us out on a date, or we get a good grade on an assignment. But those things can disappear just as quickly as they arrive. So Buddhism focuses on developing a life state of absolute happiness. Daisaku Ikeda writes, "What is the purpose of life? It is happiness. The goal of Buddhism and of faith too is to become happy." Nichiren Daishonin writes, "There is no true happiness for human beings other than chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo." The Lotus Sutra reads, "Where living beings enjoy themselves at ease." Enjoy themselves at ease here means being freely able to live the kind of life one desires and wholeheartedly enjoying that life. If you possess strong life force and abundant wisdom, it is possible to enjoy the challenge of overcoming life's hardships in much the same way that waves make surfing exhilarating and steep mountains give mountaineering its appeal. Because the mystic law of cause and effect is the source of the life force and wisdom for overcoming life's difficulties, the Daishonin states that there is no greater happiness than chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. Reality is harsh. Please courageously challenge the stern realities of life and win again in everything, in daily life, work, school, and family relations. The teachings of Buddhism and our practice of faith are the driving force for unlimited improvement. Where people possess wisdom and life force derived from their Buddhist practice, they can move everything in a brighter, more positive, and more encouraging direction. Wise, genuine practitioners of Nichiren Buddhism are able to enter into a winning rhythm in actuality, not just in theory. Koda shows how chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo helped him never give up, even through the ups and downs of recovery and finding biological relatives, and helped him move everything in his life in a brighter, more joyful direction. If you'd like to get connected to a local Buddhist community, we're everywhere, even in North Dakota. You can reach out to us at connect@buddhability.org. For next week's episode, we want to know, what's one thing that you want to embrace about yourself or someone else? You can either share your answer through email or follow us on Instagram, where we'll post the question next week in our story. Until next time, thanks for listening.